Twin Peaks gets a mulligan. Welcome to Pop Life.
On-demand audio from WAER is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. To give or to find more information, visit our website, waer.org.
I'm Joe Lee with pop culture ambassador Bob Thompson, director of the Blyer Center for Television and Popular Culture at Syracuse University. In this episode of Pop Life, we'll chat about Twin Peaks, the original, and its return to the small screen. And be sure to stick around for this week's Invitation to Binge.
Coming Sunday, April 8th.
She's dead. Wrapped in plastic.
11:30 a.m., February 24th. Entering the town of Twin Peaks.
The Los Angeles Times says Twin Peaks is certainly like nothing else on television.
W.C. Fields would say, I'd rather be here than Philadelphia.
The Washington Post calls it unprecedented. This you gotta see.
Bobby, did you kill Laura Palmer?
Sunday, April 8th, from David Lynch, Twin Peaks.
26 years after it ended, after only two seasons on ABC, David Lynch's critically acclaimed mystery crime drama Twin Peaks gets another shot on the Showtime network. Premiering back in April 1990, Twin Peaks follows an investigation headed by FBI Special Agent Dale Cooper, charged with investigating the murder of homecoming queen Laura Palmer. Often ranked as one of the great TV dramas, Twin Peaks also conjured the surreal and drew on elements of horror and the supernatural. Great show or no?
I don't think in my 33 years of watching television professionally that I ever quite had as much fun waiting for a show to come on the next week as Twin Peaks when it was in its prime. And we have to remember, it's easy to say, oh, the show started in 1990, but think of where TV was in 90. It had about 9 years of getting better. Hill Street Blues starts in 81. We get St. Elsewhere and Moonlighting. Television is becoming a lot better than it used to be. But a lot of it was still pretty conventional. This was still the era of, we still had in our memory the T.J. Hookers and the Matt Houstons and the Chips and all of that. And the idea that a network would give a television series to an art house director like David Lynch. You know, this is the guy who gave us Dune and Eraserhead, Blue Velvet, Elephant Man's the most comprehensible film that he did. In the old days, any network executive, this would have been exactly the person you wouldn't in a billion years give a television series to, and they hand it to David Lynch. And it goes 8 episodes in that first spring season, and then another 22, total of 30 episodes. And the entire series is only 32 days, all told. That's only 32 days. But it created new aesthetic space for television that didn't last long, and that show crashed and burned.
Yeah, so great ratings in the first season.
Huge ratings.
Big drop-off in the second. What do you think happened?
Well, what happened was, I think, namely, is Lynch and company didn't figure out exactly what they were going to do long-term. So the first 8 episodes is this big mystery about who killed Laura Palmer. And we get all this great Twin Peaks. Dale Cooper, the FBI agent, narrates everything to his secretary into one of these portable things. So it's like the show is narrated. And just weird dialogues is, Diane, I'm looking at a package of marshmallow bunnies or chocolate bunny. I mean, just weird stuff. Symbols. Owls, a lady that carries a log around, coffee, donuts, a stoplight that blows in the wind. I mean, the whole thing looked so artsy because it made no sense. Then, about November, they actually sort of solved the who killed Laura Palmer. And again, I won't give anything away, partially because it's hard to give it away because it's not terribly clear. And then the show kind of lost its way. They'd solved this mystery, and it moves into issues of aliens and all this other kind of stuff. By the time it got to the 22nd episode in the spring of that second season, it was third place of the three networks. It lost, I think, to a rerun of Designing Women and some made-for-TV movie that was really old. And it's too bad because even though it lost its way in those middle things, the final episode, the final hour of Twin Peaks is some of the freakiest, trippiest television you will ever see. This was so perfect for the 1990s, for the early 1990s. What made it so interesting was that there was nothing like it. That all that postmodernist bluster, that whole David Lynch thing being on our network television in primetime was so fascinating. But let's face it, while that show wasn't terribly successful in the ratings for very long, it was highly influential. Lost would never have existed without Twin Peaks. The creators of Lost have acknowledged that. Oliver Stone went on to do a thing called Wild Palms, which even sounded like Twin Peaks. This whole kind of weird postmodernist stuff is all over television now. And to go back to Twin Peaks and expect that to be as fresh and as exciting as it was, Twin Peaks is now the grandparent of all these other great shows, even The X-Files I'd put in that category. I'm afraid it's going to be like, you know, Grandpa comes back to, you know, to try to play with the kids one more time.
We do know that some of the original actors are coming back, McLaughlin, Cheryl Lee, David Duchovny, and there's going to be some new additions like Naomi Watts, Laura Dern, who's fantastic, Tim Roth, and Jim Belushi, which I'm trying to imagine in a series.
Well, at first I would think that too, you know, why bring this old sitcom guy? But let's remember that Twin Peaks played on that a lot. Michael Ontkean had been on The Rookies, kind of a, well, an okay drama in the 70s. Peggy Lipton had been on The Mod Squad. There was a lot of pretty freaky casting on Twin Peaks. And Jim Belushi sounds like the unlikely choice. Laura Dern, though, seems born to... The minute you hear Laura Dern, you almost say, oh, wasn't she in the original? She seems a perfect Twin Peaks character.
Twin Peaks, as you mentioned, did pave the way for the likes of The X-Files and subsequently shows like Stranger Things and Fargo. We should check it out just to see if they can get back to where they were.
And you're right. It did. So much of Fargo is a great example. It just has so much of the DNA of Twin Peaks in it. That was a very influential show. ABC was very proud of it. And even though they canceled it after two seasons, Twin Peaks had the disadvantage that it was being made when you still had to do a 22-episode season. If Twin Peaks had the advantages back then of doing 10 episodes here and then waiting a year and doing another 10 episodes, they may have been able to do a lot of things. Put it this way, it is amazing in 1990-91 that Twin Peaks was able to be as awesome as it was on broadcast television. This wasn't even a cable show.
One thing's for sure, we don't know what's happening in the future of that show, but we do know that Agent Dale Cooper loved his coffee.
If you say drink coffee, I'll drink coffee.
Cup of coffee.
Cup coffee, please.
I was wondering if I might trouble you for a cup of strong black coffee.
Fellas, don't drink that coffee.
There was a fish in the percolator.
Wait for the tea.
Damn good coffee. And hot.
Wait a minute.
Agent Cooper loves coffee.
You know, this is, excuse me, a damn fine cup of coffee.
Speaking of limited series, my invitation to binge this week is a limited series, and we'll get Bob's recommendation when we return.
Well, we're just talking about Twin Peaks and how surrealistic and trippy and hallucinogenic it was. But 25 years before Twin Peaks, there was a show just about as trippy. And if you're not old enough to remember it, or if you were only a kid when you watched it for the first time, I think it would be a great time to go back to a little oddment by the name of Green Acres. It went from 65 to 71, part of that whole rural sitcom thing that included Beverly Hillbillies and Petticoat Junction and the Andy Griffith Show. But this was something else entirely. It was occasionally one of the characters would pick up eggs out of a chicken. It would have the television credits of that episode on it. People would refer to the soundtrack in the background. The theme song, which is based on, ends with that Grant Wood painting with the guy with the pitchfork. More people think of that as the Green Acres image than the American Gothic. But most of all, it was this 60s moment. The premise was that Eddie Albert stars as this Harvard-educated lawyer, gets enough of the rat race, decides to leave his penthouse in Manhattan and go to a farm and live off the land. His wife, played by one of the fabulous Gabor sisters, Ava, doesn't want anything to do with this. She wants to stay in the penthouse and have all the advantages of Manhattan. But when they get there, she totally is able to integrate with all of this very odd cast of rural folk. And he, even though he's got this kind of Emersonian dream of being kind of a 60s hippie and going back to the garden, he is not able to. He continues to, he plows his field on his tractor in a three-piece suit like he was going to the, still going to the law firm. That community of Hooterville is one of the most bizarre places television ever created. And a character, the county agent Hank Kimball, is among my favorite TV characters in all of history. Wow.
I remember watching that show when I was a kid, watching it in reruns. I don't remember it the way that you do, so I'm going to definitely have to go back and check it out. Where can you get it?
It's on, I think, both Amazon and Hulu. There's three seasons on DVD, but I think all six seasons are on both of those places. Though I think you have to have Hulu Plus, and you may have to buy it on Amazon. I'm not sure.
What was once referred to as a miniseries, the limited series, is hot again in television production, and why not when you have a great linear story to tell? Such is the case with HBO's Big Little Lies, a clever murder mystery where both the murderer and the murder victim are a mystery until the very end. Big Little Lies weaves a satisfying tale of the lives of some of Monterey, California's most prominent and super competitive citizens. It blends drama, comedy, eroticism, and mystery, and features an all-star lineup, including Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, Laura Dern, and Alexander Skarsgård. Here, Renata Klein, played by Laura Dern, tries to convince Witherspoon's Madeline McKenzie to reschedule an event that competes with her daughter's birthday party.
So sweet. But tomorrow, there's a bunch of us that are all driving to San Jose for Disney on Ice.
Oh, I thought...
Well, maybe we could swing by afterwards. How late will the party be going until?
3 o'clock?
No, we won't be back by then.
But there's got to be something we can do, right? If only there was.
Sorry, were. Subjective tense, as it's contrary to fact.
Okay, how about this? Chloe and the others come to the party, big smiles on their faces, right? And after I arrange a great sleepover weekend trip to Disneyland, all expense paid, VIP passes, the works, backstage passes to Frozen.
Yeah, it's not gonna work.
I'll even get Snow White to sit on your husband's face. Maybe Dumbo can take a squat on yours.
You are so sweet.
I'd rather go to the party than the stupid show.
You're dead in this town.
I love this show. It's based on a book that I'm glad I never read because viewing the show was so fresh, not knowing, you know, what might happen or who did it. It's beautifully shot with cinematic quality. It's gorgeous scenes. The acting is outrageously good. One of the best show openers of all time, in my opinion, using Michael Kiwanuka's song, A Cold Little Heart. It's a great open. Beautifully shot, wonderfully acted, limited series, but now I'm hearing rumors that they have contacted the author of the original book to write a second season.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. And I'm not quite sure how, that would have to be some other story entirely. But you're right, that first episode, who would have thought that the place where you drop off kids to kindergarten could be one of the most exciting scenes of the season of television. And the in many ways, the writer is just showing off this idea that you could tell a story with not knowing victim or a person that committed it and make it so incredibly compelling. David Kelly is the guy who did the adaptation, and he is one of television's greatest writers, but he's been inactive for a while. He started out as a lawyer. He'd gone to Princeton Law School, wrote a little movie, and got hired to write for L.A. Law and wrote like six seasons of that, and then went on to do Ally McBeal, which, love it or hate it, was a brilliant show. Picket Fences, the seasons he did were extraordinary. Boston Legal, Boston Public, and now he's back.
Outstanding. You can binge on the limited series through HBO Now. This is Pop Life, a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media, produced by Kevin Kloss. Do you have a favorite show that you'd like for us to know about? Leave a comment on the Pop Life Facebook page and be sure to get past episodes of Pop Life at WAER.org.